You're listening to episode number 4 of The Optimal You. In this episode, I talk with registered dietitian, vegan, and endurance athlete Matt Russigno about the health benefits of a plant-based diet. Matt gives me insight on how to live healthier by eating a plant-based diet, how it can reverse prediabetes, and help men live a life of vitality. I'm men's coach Andy Bates, and it's my mission to raise the consciousness of other men so that they may be better to themselves, each other, in relationship, as leaders and fathers. In each podcast episode, we discuss strategy, learn from real-life examples, and get practical tips on how to be the optimal you. Matt Russigno is a vegan of 20 years and a leading expert in nutrition. He has a nutritional science degree from Pennsylvania State University, a public health nutrition master's degree from Loma Linda University, and certification as a registered dietitian, one of the only professional nutrition credentials. He is a co-author of the No Meat Athlete book with Matt Frazier and Appetite for Reduction with Issa Moskowitz. Matt is also a co-founder of Nutrinic, a nutrition clinic that believes solving the problem of chronic disease requires addressing its root causes and empowering patients to become their own best advocates on the path to better health. Their programs are designed to halt and even reverse disease progression by combining evidence-backed nutrition with personal guidance, developing their patients' inherent capacity for lifelong healthy decision-making. In his spare time, Matt is an accomplished athlete who races marathons, Ironman triathlons, 200-plus mile cycling events, and 24-hour races. Without further ado, I give you my conversation with Matt Russigno.
You want to dive into it? Let's see how we do.
Yeah.
Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure.
All right. I need to know, what is a vegan diet? What's a plant-based diet?
A lot of confusion about that. Happy to talk about it. So, you know, a big difference is that vegan tends to have these like lifestyle connotations with it. So, you know, a vegan doesn't eat any animal flesh or dairy or eggs or their byproducts. But then additionally, doesn't use leather, doesn't use wool, you know, avoids products tested on animals. So it's a boycott, in a way, of animal industries over concern for those animals, right? So vegan can be a loaded term, but in a good way. And then plant-based really isn't defined. I see people arguing about this all the time. Right. And some people who eat a vegan diet and their motivation is more toward health will say plant-based. And they might have the same restrictions. They may totally avoid animal products. But to them, it's a softer word. And they may not be as strict. You know, they may have some leather, some wool, you know. So that's one difference. And some people who say plant-based aren't strict at all about avoiding animal products. So it's you never quite know when someone says it.
Okay. Well, we'll get into that a little bit more. But tell me a little bit about you first. I want to know just a little bit about how you got into nutrition, how you got into forming your company, and just tell me a little bit about where all that's at.
Yeah, you know, I have a pretty interesting background, and especially, you know, now I have 2 degrees in nutrition, right? I'm an expert in the field of nutrition, specifically plant-based, but my background stems from sort of punk rock and BMX and skateboarding, and that's how I got into veganism, was through ethical veganism. It was concern out of animals. Like, I was that little kid that was always worried about animals and if they were comfortable, if they were safe, and moved snails off the sidewalk, and I was just that kid. Some people really love animals growing up. And as soon as I made that connection, that, wait a minute, this is a chicken? Like, it's the same? At like 8 or 9 years old, I said, well, I don't want to eat it. And my parents said, you're crazy, you're going to eat it, you know? And I tried to avoid it and couldn't. And then again, at like 13, 14, I tried, and then I started traveling for BMX, and it was really hard because, you know, other BMXers would just eat at McDonald's, and I did what I could. And then at 17, you know, I met other vegans and realized that it was a thing. And so I said, okay, this is for me. I'm going to do this. And I just went all in. You know, I went from Burger King to eating tofu and vegetables and brown rice, things I'd never even heard of before.
And what was the knowledge around veganism then when you started?
You know, this was in the mid-90s, and there was less out there, for sure. But I did my work. You know, I did research to find people, and I found dietitians who had written books who are now my colleagues. Hmm. And, you know, I say, hey, yours was the first book that I ever read. And they said, don't say that. It makes me feel old, you know. And so I looked to see what was out there, and yeah. There wasn't a lot, but there was evidence, and there was people saying, hey, yes, you can do this, and it might even be healthy. You know, Diet for a New America by John Robbins was a really big book at that time, mm-hmm. and then that's what inspired me to study nutrition, because I thought, hey, I want to learn about this, and I don't know what the heck I should go to college for. My parents didn't go to college, so I didn't really have any pressure, and I just thought, hey, this sounds good. I'll just go and study this stuff and see what happens.
So you started in... just from an ethical standpoint, has that stance changed? Is it taken on other meanings? And did you study just strictly vegan nutrition? Or how did you land on that is my focus? That's where that's the ticket.
It's funny. I always say that I have a foot in two very different worlds, because I'm very traditionally trained. So to become a registered dietitian, you have to do a 4-year degree in nutrition and dietetics. And it's a lot different than most people realize. It's I went to Penn State University, and it was basically pre-med, physiology, biochemistry, nutrient metabolism, very, very heavy science and clinical based. Hmm. Most dietitians work in a hospital, right? And then you have to do a year-long internship, and then you have to take an exam, and you have to do continuing ed. You know, and I did the internship and stuff through my graduate studies at Loma Linda, and that's where I got into public health, which is more of the arm of, like, what people think of with nutrition, doing education and doing classes, and you know, I taught community college. And so public health is sort of a subset of the dietetics field, and then plant-based is also another subset. So back to your question, I have a very formal, traditional training that was not focused on plant-based or vegan at all. I mean, Loma Linda University has a lot of that, but they're still very traditional. And so when I go to VegFest and I work with vegans, I also have to discuss with them, how can I say this, the science. There are a lot of myths, even promoted by vegans, about the science of, you know, nutrition and of veganism, right? And so I have to call a lot of that stuff out. But then when I speak at a professional conference, I'm like the weird vegan, and everyone thinks that I just have this bias, you know? Hmm. So it's an interesting position.
So where are you at personally with it being, like, ethical versus this is mm-hmm. the healthiest way to live?
Right. And so what I say is that the best thing to do for animals, if you care about animals, is to eat a vegan diet. If you want to be as healthy as possible, and you want to do that in a science-based way, based on what we know right now in 2017, that diet should be predominantly plants. Right? So, I mean, it's tough to put a percentage on it, but you want to look at, like, 85 to 90% of your diet should be whole plant foods. Now, what the rest of that looks like, you know, it's hard to make an argument that if you have, like, one thing of yogurt or you have a little bit of cheese occasionally, that that would affect your overall health, mm-hmm. right? So they're two different things, and people confuse them all the time, mm-hmm. right? It's like the evidence is there that if you're concerned about animals, eat a vegan diet, and the evidence is there that eating mostly plants is best, but that's different than being exclusively vegan.
Gotcha.
Does that make sense?
It does make sense. Yeah, and I think that's an important distinction. Mm-hmm. Yeah, because probably a lot of the myths derive from that misunderstanding.
Exactly. People say, oh, go vegan to prevent heart disease. And it's like, well, you know, avoiding lactose in a non-dairy cheese doesn't really have any effect on health outcomes. Mm-hmm. Right, but if you're avoiding animal products, you're not going to eat it. But if you're eating for health, then you might, you know, overlook it. But then on the other hand, a lot of people get into this for health, and then they learn all this stuff about animals and about the environment, and then so suddenly all of the reasoning applies.
Tell me, what are your top myths that you're always debunking?
Let's see. I mean, to sort of a general crowd, the big one still, unfortunately, is protein.
Okay.
You know, people don't understand protein. Protein is very, very marketable. And there's a reason. It's because, you know, it was one of the first nutrients discovered. And meat and dairy, you know, there's no conspiracy. It's just that these industries have been tied in with nutrition since it became a field of study.
So the myth is the protein, that if you eat a plant-based diet, you won't get enough protein.
Right, yeah, that's okay. The myth.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And part of it has to do with this emphasis that's just tied into nutrition as a field of study, right? And then in supplements. And, you know, whey is a byproduct from cheese. They were throwing it out. Mm-hmm. And now it's a $1 billion industry.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and to market something that was like a waste product and be able to sell it for $50 a container, I mean, brilliant. Brilliant. Yeah, it really is, you know? And so there's still a lot of this emphasis. And when we look at what the science says for how much protein you need, it's not as much as the general public thinks.
Okay.
You know? And then in the vegan world, they say, oh, you don't need to worry at all. And I say, well, you should still think about it and consider it. But the number I keep coming back to is about 1 gram per kilogram of body weight.
Okay.
You know?
And someone that's doing a plant-based diet, where are they getting that much protein?
Beans are an excellent source,
okay.
Right? Beans are high in fiber. It's really one of the best foods that you could eat for many reasons. But you're also getting protein from whole grains and from nuts and from seeds and from even vegetables.
Hmm.
Right? Vegetables have protein. Fruit has protein. So these numbers add up, right? I think it's misleading to think of foods as like, this is a carb group. This is a protein group. Because when you're eating plant-based, there's a bit of all of it in everything.
Okay.
You know,
right? So at the end of your day, you're sort of looking at the whole of what you ate. And
mm-hmm.
the likelihood is you're going to meet that protein need.
Right. Right. Exactly.
And anything over that is wasted?
Yeah, or it's used as energy, or, you know, the body excretes it, or it's turned into fat, you know. And so it's unnecessary to eat a lot. And, you know, when we think about, you know, a couple things, it's like if you want to get strong, that's important, and you need protein to build the muscle. But you also need to fuel the muscle, right? And carbohydrate is the best fuel for that. People
mm-hmm.
forget about that part, right? And then if you want to be strong, you probably also want to be healthy. So you don't want to just eat like whey powder and chicken breasts, right? You want to make sure you get some other healthy food in there so that you can be healthy for the long term.
Yeah, I see that a lot with a lot of the diet fads that are, like you said, they'll be grouped into different food groups and then really heavily weighted in one. And
mm-hmm.
yeah, inevitably, you're going to miss out on important nutrients.
Right, exactly. What I always say is like protein is just one nutrient. You know, no one ever says, hey, where do you get your zinc from? You know, it's necessary, right? You die without zinc,
mm-hmm.
but people don't think of it that way. It's just this like absolute obsession over protein. But yet, what about fiber,
mm-hmm.
right? The average intake in the U.S. for fiber is 14 grams. The recommendation is 25 to 35. You know, if you're eating a healthy plant-based breakfast, you could get 15 in the morning, no problem.
So a lot of the marketing that we're inundated with is driving this protein
mm-hmm.
craze. And
yeah.
Really, there's other nutrients that might be more beneficial.
Right, like we should think about all of them. And at the same time, we shouldn't be thinking of food as just like a collection of nutrients, right? Like we should be eating healthy food, and
mm-hmm.
healthy food has nutrients in it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I try to get past this, like, well, eat oranges for vitamin C and then, you know, eat, you know, seeds for zinc. It's like if we eat a variety of foods through the day and you're getting, you know, plant-based foods, you'll get all the nutrients.
Okay. What's another big myth out there?
Calcium is another one. Again, back to this point of, like, nutrient food, right?
Yeah.
It's like calcium, dairy, dairy, calcium, as if they're one and the same.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's weird that a food group has, you know, like one type of food has its own section on like my plate, right? There's not like a peanut butter group. That would be weird, right? Like
yeah.
just peanut butter? Aren't there other sources?
Right.
No, only peanut butter, right?
Right.
that doesn't make sense. But for dairy, we have that. And it's like, well, why does it have its own? It's like, sure, for most Americans, calcium, they get their calcium from dairy, right? And so it's like, okay, if we look at their diet, this is where they're getting it. They're maybe not getting enough, so then they should just have more dairy. And that's the rationale. Mm-hmm. And that makes sense. From a public health perspective, that makes sense. But there are lots of other sources, right? Non-dairy milks are one, but also like leafy greens. And then even things like corn tortillas and like calcium-set tofu. Like, they have calcium, and it adds up through the day, and you can get enough by eating plant foods. You know, it's not a problem.
So we have to expand our thinking with a lot of these.
Right, and just eat a variety of foods. I mean, that's a big part of this. And a lot of dietitians, you know, are stuck in this, and a lot of healthcare providers, you know, of like, okay, calcium, dairy, iron, steak. Like, and that's a very simple approach. And the thinking is that most people don't want to change their diet. And that puts us in a tough situation, right? Because, you know, I could, you know, let's say we had a doctor on this podcast and they'd say, sure, all that sounds great, but guess what? No one's going to change their diet. And if they're already drinking milk, telling them to drink more milk is a lot easier and they're more likely to adhere. And I get that. And that's sort of the conundrum of all of this.
How do you handle that, I don't know, defeatism or that,
you know,
that reluctance to change?
You know, previously I was working with, because I do a lot of different things. So I do public speaking and I do writing, and I also was seeing clients on the side before we started Nutrinic. And I was really fortunate that I would get motivated people. And so if someone comes to you and they're like, I want to make sure I'm healthy, I want to be more vegan, I want to introduce these foods, like they're like 7 or 8 out of 10 steps along down the path. And that makes my job a lot easier. Mm-hmm. Okay, do some of this, do some of this. Here's why. Here's what you need to understand. No, that's a myth. Here's what the truth about it. And then I set them on their way. It makes my job a lot easier than your average dietitian who has 10 minutes with a client who's like uncomfortable in a clinic or, you know, at a hospital, and they just want to go home and they think this person's going to take away their favorite foods, right? That's a much different situation, and I recognize that. And there's a lot of barriers. You know, like, we could just talk all day about like helping people understand what they eat and why they eat it. For any dietary change, it's like recognizing that people are going to be defensive about their food choices. If you want to talk to someone about racism, you don't start with like, hey, you're racist, you know? And because someone's going to be like this, no, I'm not, right? And they put up a wall. And it's like, hey, let's have a discussion about food choices.
Okay.
Right? Because people get defensive because they're like, I love steak. And I know that you don't eat it and you want to take it away from me. And so immediately they put up a barrier. And so for me, it's like, I don't come across as trying to force anyone to change anything. If they want to discuss it, I will. So recognizing, you know, that they'll be defensive. And then two, like, most people want to be healthy and they may not understand how to do it. And they may have failed in the past. And being able to recognize that. And then three, they may have healthy behaviors that they don't realize because they're already doing them because it's a habit and they're not thinking about it. But maybe they love broccoli and they eat it all the time and they just haven't thought to eat other cruciferous vegetables or leafy greens or something. And so you try to find that and help them build on what they're already doing.
Establishing yourself as an ally. You know, hey, I'm not here to dominate you. Approaching it a way that they will take ownership of it or create awareness around certain routines or foods that they're already eating and how to expand on that.
And it depends on the situation. You know, I'm at a party and someone is like, oh, so you're vegan? Did you know this thing? And this is stupid. And I'm like, hey, man, you can have your opinion, but it's working for me. And I care about animals. So this is what I decided to do. But if you don't want to, that's fine by me. And just don't engage, you know? And then, but if someone's in my office and their wife brought them here and they're just sitting cross-armed, right, because they're, maybe their wife has been berating them for years about eating healthier and they thought that she brought him in here to have someone else berate them, it's like reaching out and just asking them how they feel about it.
Yeah.
You know, what kind of changes do you want to make? And maybe there's something that they just couldn't open up to their partner in some way. You know, it ends up being like, you know, sometimes I wish I had more training in like counseling and psychology because it's a big part of this.
Yeah. What is some of the science around plant-based diet that is showing it is healthy?
So what we're doing here at Nutrinic is we are, we're building a program that treats prediabetes.
Okay.
And so we've been really digging into the research. And what it shows is there's a few ways to look at it. There are these studies called, you know, cohorts, where you follow a group of people. And for like the Adventist Health Study, it's almost 100,000 people. And you follow them for years and decades in some cases. And then they fill out a food frequency questionnaire. And then they fill out any health changes, right? And so you can follow and see what are they eating and who gets diabetes. What are they eating? Who gets heart disease? Who gets cancer, right? Mm-hmm. And then you can chart all of this. And overwhelmingly, vegans and vegetarians have lower rates of all chronic diseases. So type 2 diabetes, heart disease, cancer, all of them, right? But that's just an environmental study that doesn't prove causation, right? So then what you can do is look at the mechanisms and say, well, what could it be about their diets? You know, and, you know, someone might say, well, maybe they're just exercising more. And it's like, well, no, we can control for that. And it's, well, maybe because they weigh less. Well, they do weigh less, and that does affect your health outcome, but we can also control for that. And it still holds. So it's something in the food. Well, what is it? Fiber. Right, is a big one. Phytochemicals from fruits and vegetables is a big one. Lower consumption of saturated fats. And then even a really interesting one is the iron. There's two types of iron, heme and non-heme. And heme iron is an animal product. And that might affect insulin sensitivity. And so then you can look at the research that's done that's very specific about, you know, clinical studies and stuff where people, they feed people meat or they feed them beans and they look at outcomes and they can measure insulin sensitivity, blood glucose, all these things and say, look, these are the mechanisms. Mm-hmm. And then that's where you get into the benefits of eating more plant foods.
I feel like it makes a lot of sense. And then, but then I also feel like when I hear that story about you, you're like, I'm at a party and someone says, yo, you're a vegan. Like, it's very aggressive. Like, there's an aggressive stance that feels like culturally against this this way of eating. What's going on there?
People are really defensive about their way of life, right? With anything. I parallel it with cycling. Mm-hmm. You know, like, there are people with, like, the Celebrate Diversity bumper stickers who will, like, almost hit me and then scream at me. And it's just like, there's like this divide between what they believe and what they do, right? Like, most people love animals. Mm-hmm. You know, if they see an animal suffering on the sidewalk, most of us care. Mm-hmm. You know, not all of us would intervene, but most of us like have a feeling toward animals. Mm-hmm. But then when you say, well, your diet kills animals, people go, whoa, wait a minute. It's not me. I mean, they're already killing them and everyone else. And then you get into this defensive mechanism because we don't think a lot about what happens to animals, right?
Yeah.
Or we say, oh, well, it's humane and I get it from a smaller farm. And it's like, well, smaller farms make up a very small percentage of the meat that's eaten, right? It's like 2% or something. Mm-hmm. But yet, you know, 99% of the people I talk to all get their meat from there, you know? Mm-hmm. It just doesn't correlate. And so people are very defensive. And they don't want to, like, no one wants to have an ideology pushed on them. Mm-hmm. For any reason. Mm-hmm. Even if it would be better for them. Even if it, like, aligns with their values. No one wants that pushed on them. And so I chat with people about this stuff, you know? And I say, hey, it's not this big, scary thing. You do what you can, you know?
What's the simplest thing someone could change to their diet that would have the biggest impact?
You know, eating more beans. I always come back to this. And if you didn't like them growing up, you know, then try different ones. It's like, I hated baked beans as a kid.
Yeah.
You know, and I still don't like them. But I eat all, but I love refried beans. I love chickpeas. I love black beans. I love Peruvian beans. There's all these beans that are out there. So just something like Meatless Monday, you know, and you're like, oh, does it really make a difference? Well, it does. You know, if 100 million people did Meatless Monday, think of the animals that would be saved. Think of, like, the health improvements. You know, you can look at studies that say people who just added one cup of beans, two servings to their diet, lost weight, reduced their LDL cholesterol. Right? They didn't change anything else.
Really?
Just adding beans. Yeah, the fiber, the magnesium, the phytochemicals. you know, the fullness, because beans fill you up. Hmm. So you're going to eat less later. Hmm. Right? And so just something like Meatless Monday can go a really long way. You know, our brains, like, work against us. Like, we like to make everything complicated because your brain wants to just keep doing what you're doing. It's like this analogy of being in a rut. It's easy to be in a rut.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Right? It's not a good place to be, but it's easy. And so your brain fights against you.
Yes.
You know? It's like, yes. Sure, I eat totally vegan and I commute 25 miles a day on my bike and all those things sound totally extreme to people, but I also, like, can't bring myself to do 5 minutes of Duolingo to learn Spanish better. You know? It's the same thing. It's like, for years I've been telling myself I'm going to do this and I don't. Mm-hmm. You know? Because I'm just in a rut of not doing it. And my brain is like, no, it'd just be easier to, like, zone out on Instagram than actually learn something.
There's a lot of habits that we create that we're become unaware of that aren't serving us.
Right. And our philosophy here and what we're doing with this program is that there's a lot of work in the beginning. And people think that it'll be a lot of work forever. But it's always a lot of work to change habits. Mm-hmm. But then once you get it to a point, you can get it to a point where you don't think about it anymore, right? Yeah. And that point seems impossible, you know? But I know that it takes me 55 minutes to get to work, and I'm going to be riding my bike, and that's what I do.
Yeah.
If there was a car there and it only took 20 in the car, I'd be like, I'll drive today. It's hot. I got to run an errand. I'll drive. But to me, this is what I do. So I don't think about it anymore. Mm-hmm. It's like, how can we create new habits so that we don't need to think about them? Right? We, like, trick our brain.
Yes. You're right. Yeah, I've been doing a lot of work recently around that golden rule of habits, the cue, routine, reward cycle. Mm-hmm. And creating awareness around the cue and the reward and then switching out the routine. Mm-hmm. You can very rapidly change habits, consciously change habits. You know, so if my cue is that I'm bored and I walk over to the store and grab a candy bar and the routine is, or the reward is I'm not bored anymore. Mm-hmm. If I can recognize that cue, find some routine that also makes me not feel bored anymore, but isn't a candy bar. If I change that routine, I can replace candy bar habit with healthy habit.
Right. Right. Smart. Yeah. Is there a book based on that?
There is a book. The Power of Habit. Charles Duhigg. I'm not sure how to say that last name, but this book is amazing. Definitely. What's your approach with habits at the clinic?
What we do more is about, you know, building skills. You know, we use this term skill power.
Yeah.
And it's the idea that instead of relying on willpower, right, you build the skill to set up your environment so that you don't have to worry about willpower.
Tell me more. Like, this sounds good.
Like, if you have cookies on the table,
yeah,
you know, or available, you're setting yourself up to resist eating them. And that's a terrible predicament. And one we're often going to lose, right? And if you can have cookies on the table and then never eat them, then, like, you don't need me. Because you're, like, clearly have very strong willpower.
Right.
But for, like, most of us mortals, we just, like, grab one, you know? Yeah.
So it's and going so, on the offense with your health. Yeah, if you go to the grocery store, don't go straight to the sweets aisle. Spend some time in the produce aisle.
Right. And then also taking the time to learn how to cook things that you like. And, you know, taking more time in the beginning. You know, it's like effort in the beginning. And then, you know, you might make some things you don't like. You know, and that takes time. And you're like, oh, I bought all this food and I don't even like it now. But, like, hey, then you figure out something that you do like. So you do this work in the beginning, you know. And if, like, cooking at home, it's about creating these skills. Like, as soon as you get home, putting on rice or putting on beans or something so that you're not tempted by eating out.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
You know, and it's about just starting the skills.
I like that. And it's an approachable way of going about it. You know, it's not just cold turkey. Oh, you got to cut out all this stuff that you're doing. It's like, here, we're going to spend some time experimenting and learning and trying new things. And part of that mindset of doing those things also, creates the space for that lifestyle change to occur.
Absolutely. I mean, changing habits is a very difficult thing. You know, I forget the percentage. It's like 97% of people who lose weight put it back on within 2 years. But yet we like, it's a billion-dollar industry of like, oh, people lost weight doing this, and they lost weight doing this. And so suddenly you think you failed, and you're in the minority of failing. But really, you're in the 97% of people who lost weight and then put it back on. It's a tough, tough thing to change habits. You know, and I think just recognizing that, you know, we tend to be like, oh my God, I failed. You know, it's like, no, it's a difficult thing. It's an uphill battle to eat well in our world because there's so much unhealthy food readily available, you know, and then even just exercise. You know, our environment really isn't set up well to get exercise.
Now, I know you focus a lot on diabetes. I don't know, would you say it's epidemic in our culture?
Yeah, I mean, the rates are going up, absolutely, and especially with pre-diabetes. You know, and the difference is, and a lot of people may not understand this, is that, you know, it's not just about sugar. Everyone's like, oh, I eat too much cake, I'm going to get diabetes. You know, it's about over time, our body has difficulty bringing the glucose into the cell. And that has to do with the whole physiology of our cardiovascular system with insulin and glucagon and the insulin receptors, and all of these things are affected by what we eat and if we get exercise or not. But it's this long-term thing. It's not just like, oh, I ate cake, now I have diabetes, you know? Yeah, in the U.S., this is National Diabetes Statistics Report from the CDC. It just came out this year. It's estimated 84 million people have pre-diabetes, right? Adults. So that's 33%, one in three.
Yeah. Scary.
Right, have pre-diabetes. And almost half of all adults over 65 have it. And so pre-diabetes means that your blood glucose is elevated, but not high enough to be diagnosed as type 2 diabetes.
Help me with that type 2 and type 1, because type 2 is totally fixable, reversible. Type 1 is genetic.
Yeah. Type 1 is predominantly genetic. It's exclusively genetic. And I have a bad habit of saying diabetes when I mean type 2 diabetes and lumping them together. Because most cases of type 2 most cases of diabetes are type 2 diabetes.
Mm-hmm.
And when we talk about pre-diabetes, we're talking about people who have slowly elevated their blood glucose and they're at risk for type 2 diabetes.
Okay.
You know, and it can get more complicated with that than that, because what happens is your pancreas has trouble producing insulin. You know, with type 1, it just doesn't, period. You know, your pancreas does not produce enough insulin.
Mm-hmm.
But with type 2, eventually your pancreas stops or really limits producing insulin. So they are related, but type 2 has to do with lifestyle and nutrition.
How effective is nutrition versus medication for reversing or, you know, eliminating the possibility of type 2 diabetes?
Yeah, the reason that we focus on pre-diabetes is because there's not medication involved yet, right? You're not on insulin. You're probably not on metformin, which is the drug that's given most often for type 2 diabetes to reduce, you know, blood glucose levels. And so the opportunity for change through diet is there, and it's ripe, and it's ready. You know, your number may have been at 105 and prediabetes is diagnosed at 100. If we can get you just eating a little bit better, more beans, right, meatless Monday, getting a little bit of exercise, you can get that number back down under 100, right? And because eating more fruits and vegetables and beans does a number of things, right? It slows the insulin response. It improves your insulin sensitivity. It works on this very micro level to reduce your blood glucose.
I like that. That makes a lot of sense. I remember, I think it was Sean Phillips who said, you know, you can make lifestyle choices in your 30s and 40s so that you're making your health and life decisions in your 70s, or if a doctor is making those choices for you.
Right, right. And the biggest risk is of having a heart attack, right? You're at a very, very increased risk of having a heart attack if you have diabetes,
mm-hmm.
right? And so you know, we look at heart disease as the number one killer, right, in the U.S., type 2 diabetes is the underlying cause of that, right, for a lot of people.
Okay. Tell me more how they're interconnected there.
So if your blood glucose is high, right, the glucose is bouncing around in your arteries and it shouldn't be there, right? So it's causing damage at this microscopic level. And then it's related because type 2 diabetes is most often, not exclusively, caused by poor diet. And the same poor diet increases cholesterol levels and just overall damages your cardiovascular system, right? Hypertension from too much sodium, not enough potassium. Mm-hmm. And so it's this whole system that's affected. You know, we have them in boxes, right? Hypertension, type 2 diabetes, heart disease, right? But they're all related. They're all our cardiovascular system. And so that's the big response. It's like having high blood glucose is an example, is showing you, it's quantifying that your arteries aren't doing so well. Your insulin response isn't doing so well. Your insulin sensitivity, your uptake of glucose, all of those systems are not functioning how they should be.
Mm-hmm. Okay, that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. And this stuff, it can be turned around pretty quickly with diet. I mean, it's phenomenal what foods can do. You know, even eating more fruit, feeling, oh, fruit, that's sugar. It's like, no, eating more fruit can be helpful.
Yeah, that's the thing that's really pretty exciting about it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you really can make a choice if you want to make a change and live a healthier lifestyle, or continue, like you said, in this comfort zone that is also killing you.
Right. And back to what we said about how do we get people to do it? It's mm-hmm. like, I always tell people, make it your own,
mm-hmm.
you know, because they're like, here, like, oh, plant-based, what, I'm supposed to eat a $15 whole food salad every day?
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, no, do it your own way. You know, I do a lot of my shopping at Mexican markets mm-hmm. and, you know, Thai markets and Indian markets where the produce is cheap. There's lots of spices. There's lots of good, healthy food. You know, and different ways to make it, and it really can expand what you're eating, not limit what you're eating.
So that would be another myth, right? That vegan food is not delicious.
Right, not delicious, or that it's limiting.
Mm-hmm.
You know, most of us, like, if you eat it like Applebee's for dinner or whatever, like, sure, you know, what can you eat as a vegan? Some crappy side salad and maybe a veggie burger? Like, I don't even know. But, like, I mean, I haven't been in one in a decade, so I don't know. You know, and if you live in a major city, you can find these ethnic groceries and restaurants,
mm-hmm.
and they have lots of plant-based options.
Mm-hmm. And there's, if you don't live in a big city, again, it goes back to that. There's a little more effort up front. If you're going to mm-hmm. be doing a road trip, you'll probably have to plan a little bit ahead of time to bring some food with you.
Right.
You know, that's going to keep you healthy and sustained during that time where you may not have so many options out on mm-hmm. the road.
Yeah, and absolutely. And these things for me, sometimes I forget, right? We forget what we do ourselves because you're used to doing it, right? It's like, but for me, like I travel a lot for work and I travel, you know, not as much anymore, but for races and things. So I might be in unfamiliar places. And it's just like, what exchange am I willing to make? Like some people like, for lunch, they have to sit down and eat a meal. And for me, it's like, oh, well, we can't really figure out anything. I'll just go to the grocery store and I'll do bananas and peanut butter. I'll do baby carrots and hummus, you know, just like, and I'll make a meal out of that,
mm-hmm.
you know, mm-hmm. if I have to.
Once that lifestyle and that system and that way of thinking gets ingrained, then you're seeing opportunity for it everywhere.
Right. Right. Like most people don't realize how narrow, you know, their experience and thinking is.
mm-hmm.
And you know, they knew one vegan who ate bland tofu and was anemic. And that is their view of it. When they hear the word, that is what they think of. And that's it. Right?
Yeah.
And it's hard to back people out of that and be like, no, I mean, I walk down the street to get delicious tacos and they're cheap and they're healthy and they're great, you know?
How can a plant-based diet increase for a man, like their energy, or can it, you know, so their ability, because I know that like steak has a real connotation to it of being manly and giving strength. And is that true, or is plant-based diet a alternative that increases that energy and virility, or?
Right. And yeah, it's a good question. There's a lot of, and this is why, food, it's not just, we don't choose our food based on its nutrition quality, really, right? There's like a image around it, like steak like represents like masculinity. And if we want to be masculine, then we eat the steak and we say, yeah, I'll eat that animal because it's like manly, And so people criticize veganism through that lens, But I think like, let's like taking care of yourself, is an important thing. And can you do that with plants? Yeah. I mean, just fiber, just to like clean out your system, have more regular bowel movements, which is an important thing, right? For men with colon cancer and similar diseases. And then, we think about nutrients. It's like fruits and vegetables are the most nutrient-dense foods, And so you want to get more nutrients, eat more fruits and vegetables. And I think that that's really important. And I think of it too with like, protecting, right? It's like, well, we want to protect the environment. We want to protect animals and we want to be there for others for a longer period of time, then we need to eat healthy and right. And if you don't want to cause pain to animals, well then, don't eat them, right? When we look about animals in the world, it's like, God, I don't know the percentage, but it's like 95, 98% of animals that are used for food, And I know a lot of well-meaning people who like donate to like, shelter or something, and that's great. And those animals need to be cared for as well. But if you really want to help animals, it's taking them off your plate, That's where you come across them most often.
I like that reframe where what's more masculine, eating a steak that you probably bought from somewhere, so not as if you were out hunting it, and as you live in the wilderness and that's a survival thing, or is it more masculine to say, no, I'm in control of my life and my health, and I'm going to do what's best for me, and it's going to keep me around for my kids or my loved ones and give me energy, and I'm going to show up as my best self.
And I mean, that's great. You put it perfectly.
Thanks.
That's absolutely it. And people say, well, what about like, indigenous folks and they hunt and they use their own animals and they use the whole animal. And then what about backyard eggs? And I said, great, but those are exceptions. And just because those exceptions exist isn't a justification for your everyday behaviors, And it's like, cool, vegan except when you hunt? Okay, sure. But like, who does that? No one, probably, right? Vegan except backyard eggs? No, most people who eat backyard eggs also eat other eggs. You know what I mean? We tend to point to the exception all the time as a defense of our own behaviors when it's not totally rational.
One of the myths I know of that I come up against a lot is working out, building muscle. I guess it's connected to that protein myth again. How can, are there examples of, athletes and people that are, living this high energy life that also eat a plant-based diet?
Yeah, definitely. And that's something that's changed, over the last like 5 to 8 years or so, is this rise of like the vegan athlete. And there's a lot of them. A way, if your listeners want to look up some folks, one of the best ways is there's a group of bodybuilders and CrossFit athletes, and they're called Plant Built. And their whole thing is they compete and they say, look, we're vegan and we're competing, and there's a lot of us. And then there's also a running group called Strong Hearts Vegan Power. And they do like those Ragnar races and the relay races.
What are your favorite testing, like, or marker methods for someone to look at their health, from a biomarker point of view, and really see where they're at or where they could compare if they've tried plant-based for a little while and get some hard evidence on paper of what's going on.
You know, I think iron is an important one. You know, and, you know, looking at the labs, looking at cholesterol and seeing those numbers. And I think if someone switched to plant-based, they should see an improvement in all of those numbers.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think it is a myth that vegans are more likely to be iron deficient. It's not true. They get iron from a variety of sources. What's interesting is vegetarians might be more likely to be iron deficient because they're eating dairy and eggs, which have very, very little iron in them. And so when you replace those foods with almost any plant food, you're going to see a bump in your iron consumption.
Okay.
You know, and for a lot of people, you know, it's a matter of giving it time and eating enough. That's the biggest problem that I see with people who are very active, who switch to plant-based, is they're simply not eating enough food.
Okay.
You know, like if you usually got a burrito and it had, you know, meat and cheese in there, and then you say, okay, no meat, no cheese, you're taking out like 25% of the calories.
Hmm.
Right? And that's great if people lean down and they say, wow, I look great. And then they say, wait, I'm losing energy. Wait, this diet isn't working. It's because they're just not eating enough. They're not replacing those calories.
Okay.
You know, so that's an important one.
That's a good distinction to make. Yeah.
Yeah.
And they're probably feeling satiated and full because of the fiber and
exactly the volume
and the volume of the plants.
And it's like, look, just eat more. You can eat more. You know, that's why a lot of the athletes I work with, like, we have discretionary calories. It's like, you know, you've eaten 10 servings of fruits and vegetables a day, tons of whole grains. It's like, you want some ice cream at night? Eat some ice cream. You know, cashew ice cream, coconut ice cream. Mm-hmm. Like, you have those calories. You know. Okay. I mean, I have friends who eat 5,000, 6,000, 7,000 calories a day because they have to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I hadn't thought of that in that way. But I could see that would be a sort of a lifestyle change, an unexpected lifestyle change.
Right.
You know, another area to put the effort in up front.
It's like eating a giant salad is great for dinner, but you got to have a lot of stuff in there if that's going to be your dinner, you know.
Mm-hmm. Well, talk to me about supplements. Do you recommend supplements for anyone that's doing a plant-based diet?
Yeah, it is true that all vegans need to take, if you're eating exclusively vegan, you need to take a B12 supplement.
Okay.
You know, there's no B12 in plant foods, and that's absolutely true. You know, we used to get it from the soil. We used to think that the bacteria in our colon makes it and that it used to be absorbable, but it's not anymore for whatever reason. That could be more of a critique of civilization than it is a vegan diet. So you do need to take a B12 supplement. So that is one if you're eating exclusively vegan. But other than that, you know, most people don't need supplements.
Okay.
You know, they should be getting it from food, iron and calcium and D and all those things you can get from food and from the sun.
Nutrition hasn't been traditionally taught in Western medicine. And are you finding opposition in your work when your clients go and see their regular physician and talk to them about diets?
You know, things are changing. In the last 5 years have really been incredible. And we're seeing cardiologists and MDs and more dietitians really get on board with this because the evidence is there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm involved with a conference called the Plant-Based Prevention of Disease Conference. And, you know, you get MDs showing up who say, oh, my God, I just heard about this. Why wasn't I taught this? You know, and that is changing because we are seeing, we can see the results when people eat more plant foods. And one of the biggest barriers is people saying no one will change their diet that much. Mm-hmm. And it's like, well, we give them the evidence and we show them what it can do and we give them the skills to do it and they will change.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, again, healthcare, like we could save billions of dollars, right? If people if people ate more plant foods. Mm-hmm. And so I think that these fields are changing. I mean, I gave a presentation about how to counsel vegans for one of the biggest dietitian conferences. And my room was packed, 300 dietitians, standing room only, you know, because they wanted to hear about this because they know that it's changing and it's moving in that direction, you know, and I got a lot of questions after and they were like, well, I'm not a vegan, but I had no idea about all this. And it's so interesting. And I want to eat more of these foods now. And so we're really seeing a big change. I think the next 5 years will be really interesting with all this.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
And just before you go, who has been the most influential in your life most influential person in your life?
Oh my gosh. Oh my God, I don't know if I could think of one person here. you know, I as a teenager, you know, I was like a BMXer and skateboarder, so I was really into like alternative culture, and with those worlds, you get to meet the people that you look up to, which is always cool. It's like, you know, you see somebody in a magazine, and then a couple of weeks later, you can see them at the skate park and be hanging out with them, and maybe you all go get burritos. You know, so I've been really lucky that these people who I like really looked up to, you know, I got to hang out with. And it's also true in my field with like dietitians that I'm now colleagues with, you know?
Yeah.
And then politically, I mean, I've always read a lot of like, that stuff really influenced me, like Malcolm X and Emma Goldman and just these people who were up against these massive struggles and worked really hard to do what they thought was the right thing. And so those people have really influenced me too.
Yeah. Well, it sounds like, you know, that you're on a winning team here. Yeah, that, you know, there is science backing up what you're counseling, and I appreciate you taking the time to educate me on it.
Yeah, it's my pleasure. I mean, I love to talk about this stuff, and I think it's really just people just don't know. They don't know it's out there, and they think it has to be a huge thing. Yeah.
This just popped in me because I connected with what you said earlier about when you were a kid and starting to put together, oh, wait, that chicken is that chicken? My daughter just said that to me the other day, and,
oh, wow.
And that really got me thinking. So as a parent, what were are your recommendations for going plant-based for the family?
Yeah, it's definitely possible. And I suggest if someone is starting to eat this way and they have young kids, is to see an expert who can really go over the details with them. Because kids' stomachs are very small and they can fill up really quickly on plant foods. So all these things that we're saying that people should eat more of, for kids sometimes we have to, you know, add like maybe white rice instead of brown rice just so it doesn't fill them up as much. You know, a little bit of processed food, you know, it might be a good thing for kids.
Okay.
You know, so some of the like meat alternatives and whatnot, like, you know, those things don't need to be totally avoided, you know, for kids and adults too. You know, again, it's like that 85% should be whole plant foods. Mm-hmm. And then the 15%, you have some leeway. You mm-hmm. know what I mean? It's like, I like vegan pizza. You know?
Mm-hmm. So we don't have to totally take the fun out of those comfort foods that we're used to.
Definitely. I mean, and you know, you still want them to eat the fruits and vegetables and stuff as well. And sneaking that stuff in there can be difficult, right? It's always challenging for all parents, I think. So, but it is doable.
Cool. Thanks, man. This has been really educational.
Yeah,
I'm super
absolutely.
Grateful.
Cool, man. Thank you for having me on.
Tell me real quick where people can connect with you on the in person or on the interwebs.
So almost all my social media is just my name, which is Matt Rossigno. And I don't know if you have it spelled out on the webpage or whatever for the podcast.
Yeah, definitely.
And then the clinic here is Nutrinic.com is a way for people to find us. And we're based in Pasadena.
Spell that for us.
Sure. It's Nutrinic.com.
Excellent.
So Nutrinic.
Cool. Well, thanks. If you like this podcast, please subscribe. There are many more great ones on the way. And if you're ready to tap into your own potential and be the optimal you, contact me today by going to theoptimalyou.com.